So, my name is Anut Madas. I'm pleased to be back at Gita Nagari. First time I've attended one of these retreats. Very honored to be sharing some of the time with His Holiness Ramapad Swami and His Grace Forbidden Sri Prabhu. And it's always interesting to be reminded, even in a room full of probably one of the highest percentages of PhDs and most educated people in the country, still you can have 10 minutes of PowerPoint problems. It just shows that the material energy is practically impossible to defeat. And somehow or other, by Krishna's grace, we can we make some progress here. So the topic is really looking at Guru Tattva. The whole weekend is Guru Tattva, and this is kind of picking up a little bit on what Ravindra Suprabhu was speaking about this morning, about how Krishna is absolute yet relative, the Guru is absolute yet relative, etc. So there's these kind of polarities or things that may seem to be contradictions within understanding what is Guru, what is our relationship with Guru, what is the position of the Guru, what is the service of the Guru, etc. So I thought we'll analyze these a little bit in the context of trying to understand a little more clearly what is Guru Tattva, because we need to not only understand for ourselves in our practical spiritual advancement, we need to be able to explain it to others. And we also see that in the world today there's a lot of misunderstandings about what does it mean to be a guru, what is a guru, who's a guru. It's kind of becoming popular again these days. Years ago, Prabhupada said accepting a guru is not like a fashion, because in those days, in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, it was kind of a fashion to have a guru. Same way you might want to have a hairstyle or something like that's fashionable. So yes, oh, you have a guru? Oh, I have a guru too. So sometimes that mood comes. And sometimes we see people that don't understand what is a guru. They consequently, as the expression goes, follow the guru to hell. So that's also something to be, needs to be understood and explained properly. So, so we're going to be looking at Guru Tattva and Parampara, polarities in understanding of Guru Tattva from a Vaishnava perspective. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So actually we're going to start with doing a little, Shraddha Dasi is going to help a little bit. Is the lights here? Where are the lights? We might want to be turning them kind of on and off a little bit. Great. So just a little bit, going to sense this isn't going to be a lecture so much. Hopefully a little bit of interaction here. But just to start with, because again, we may know all these things, but it's good to discuss them, clarify, and also be sure we can explain properly. Why is it important to accept a guru in the first place? I mean, most of us in the room have done it, but besides the fact, I mean, I remember actually as a new Bhakta Jeff, 1975, and I was told by my temple president, you're going to India and you're going to get initiated. So that's one reason you should do it, because your mother or your temple president or your husband or your father tells you to do it, but that may not be the best reason. So why is it important to accept a guru? What are some of the reasons given in the Shastra? So anybody can raise your hand. Just yes.
Connections with Krishna.
Okay. Connections with Krishna. Okay. You're going to try to write big enough they can see way back there, hopefully. Okay. Is that okay? Good.
Thirst for spiritual inquisitiveness.
Whose thirst? Our thirst. So what's that have to do with accepting a guru, though? Okay, but with the thirst, what's that got to do? You could say, because the guru can quench your thirst? Would that be it? He can satisfy our need? Is that your point? I'm just trying to understand your point. Okay, can satisfy our need for God. Yes, Prabhu.
He can discipline us to be in the class of Krishna consciousness.
Okay, good. He can provide the discipline for us. Okay, we heard that this morning from Vinasarupu. It's not just hearing, but it's being trained to be qualified to hear. A very profound point he made this morning. What are some other reasons? Yes, Atma, way in the back.
To have someone who represents the supreme authority to guide you back to the supreme destination.
Okay, good. So a guide, can we say that? The guide, a bona fide guide, an authorized guide for the supreme destination. Yes.
To get contaminated with Krishna prema.
Contaminate with Krishna prema. I have a feeling English is not your first language. Yeah, okay. But we got the purport. Can we say to awaken us to Krishna prema? How's that? Yeah. Can I edit that a little bit? It's one of my jobs in communication. A little editing now and then. Somebody says, I hate you. Then we're supposed to say, I can understand you have some problems with this situation. Something like that. Okay. So... go ahead. Contaminates us. That's what he wants it. We know what he means. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to stand correct and add one right there because the guru is transparent, which I just failed to do right there for a minute. Transparent. The guru is transparent representative of Krishna, right? Yeah, let's write that down. Transparent. What else? Why should we accept the guru?
To understand the personal aspect.
Okay, very important. Reveals the transparent knowledge, yeah. And then he said,
to show us the personal aspect.
Okay, reveals the personal aspect of the Lord. So he connects us with Krishna, satisfies our need for God, gives us a discipline, is an authorized guide. He can fill our hearts or contaminate us with Krishna prema. He's a transparent via medium. He reveals. Actually, is that how is that attached? Can we just move the flip chart to the side? Okay. Okay. You can if you finish, you can write on the paper. That's okay if you fill it. Okay. What else? Yeah. Two or three. Ravindrasur Prabhu.
Yes. Can show us how it is done.
Okay. Nice. Okay, shows us how it's done. So he's exemplary? Okay, good. Or he's exemplar, he teaches us, shows us how it's done. Very important. Yeah. And through that we can say he helps instill some faith in the process because we see that living representative. Very good. There are a couple other hands here. Krishnanam? Let's go Krishnanam and then put right in front of him. Okay, good. Helps us develop a service attitude. So, PhD is about 10 minutes on PowerPoint. How much? What do you guess on the flip chart? Tearing off scotch tape. How long will that take? You going to just write there? Yeah, we'll just do that. Okay. Krishnanam, can you repeat?
Service attitude.
Okay. He invokes within us, teaches us the service attitude. Okay, yes, Prabhu?
Two things. Implants the seed of devotion.
Implants the seed of devotion?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And did I get seeds? Diksha, as Mother said in the morning?
I didn't hear that one, sorry.
Eradicates seeds.
He eradicates. Okay. Okay, helps us cleanse our hearts of sins and sinful desires. Okay. There's one really important one we're kind of missing here.
Wait.
Okay, good. That's one of the things that the guru does. But the question is why? Not so much what he does, why? Why? Why do we have to approach a guru? Mataji?
Because we may not know whether we are doing it right.
Okay, good. Good. Because we don't know. We're in ignorance. Okay. Why else? Yes. Okay, good. These are all good reasons.
Connection.
Okay, same. Good, thank you. Let me get two more and then I'm going to throw one in. Ram, Shri Ram?
Because he realized the truth.
Okay. These are all because he has realized the truth. Good. These are all good. Does Krishna have anything to do with this formula?
Krishna wants it.
Thank you. Can you say that louder?
Krishna wants it.
Krishna wants it. That's a pretty important one, isn't it? Right? Krishna says, if you want to know me, approach a spiritual master. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master, right? Famous verses. So that's a critically important part of it. God says, this is the way I do it. Right? Like if you go to a train station, you can't go to the chai counter and say, I'd like a ticket to Calcutta, please. They say, no, no, that's over there. Say, no, no, I like a ticket. In fact, I'll tell a little joke if I can. My son Gorvani told me this joke. He not only sings, he has some good jokes. You might have heard this before. The man walks into the library and says, excuse me, I like a veggie burger, fries, and a lassi. And the person looks up at him with some kind of disbelief and says, sir, this is a library. And he says, oh, I'm so sorry. I'd like a veggie burger. So Krishna wants it. This is the form that Krishna lays out. Isn't if you want to know me, because he's a person, he says that my system is I've deputed my devotees to act as my representatives in this world. So they are connected with Krishna. They can satisfy your need for God. They can teach you discipline. They can guide you. They will contaminate your heart with Krishna prema. They provide knowledge as a transparent via medium. They can reveal the personal aspect. All of these things teach us a service attitude, implant seed of devotion, cleanse our hearts. It's obviously very important for us. So, if we can take the flip chart and maybe, do we have any sticky tack? I didn't ask that earlier. Do you have anything? Okay. There's a lot of PhDs here that can. Okay, we'll get one. So next question. So obviously it's very, very important. And all of these different things, of course, nobody quoted any particular Shastra references, but they're all established in the Shastra. What is the actual position of such a person? What is the position of such a person who is guru? Right? What is it? What? How should we see a person who is guru? We've just understood the reasons why we have to approach a guru. Well, if we approach him, as Ravindra Swarup Prabhu said this morning, there's a relationship there. So how do we envision, how are we meant to envision that relationship? Atman Prabhu?
As the servitor personality of God.
Okay, good. So very important position. Okay? The guru is the servitor personality of Godhead. Okay? Well, how else? Let me unpack that a little bit. Yes, Mataji.
He's as good as Krishna.
Okay, as good as Krishna. Okay. This kind of limits the field of potential hirees, doesn't it? As good as Krishna. Yes, way in the back.
Krishna style or dear to Krishna?
Good. He's very dear to Krishna. So, as good as Krishna, supreme personality, the servitor personality of Godhead, very dear to Krishna. What else? Yes?
Representative.
Good. The representative of Krishna. Okay. How else? How should we see this person, guru? Okay. He speaks. Yeah, as guru because he's repeating what he's heard, right? He's it's kind of like representative. Okay, can we say speaking on behalf of Krishna? Can we say that? Okay, speaking on behalf of Krishna in the parampara. Okay. Yes, actually one more here. Okay, nice. The external manifestation of super soul. Of course, these are all different sources from Shastra, from what Prabhupada said. Let's a couple things up here. on the PowerPoint here. Somebody with a nice loud voice want to read that? Or a medium loud voice? Or everyone want to whisper in unison? Or Mataji? Yeah, go for it. Oh, okay. That's fine. Continue. That's great. Go ahead. That was working. Shastrena pramanaya Guru Rupe Krishna Kripa Karnana Bhakti Dhanane. Great, perfect. Okay, and the translation, somebody with a loud voice want to read that? Because I don't know, can you see that in the back, way in the back? Krishna Nam, can you read it nice and loud?
According to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is not different from Krishna. Lord Krishna is the form of the spiritual master who delivers his devotees.
Okay, so we... Good, from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the spiritual master is non-different from Krishna. Okay? From Shastra. Very powerful statement. Okay, what else? Who else would like to read? Anybody? Yes?
Saksha dhari kvena samastra shastra. This is enjoyed in every scripture. Acharya ma vijanya. Srimad Bhagavatam 11th chapter 17th verse. One should consider the Acharya to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In spite of all these instructions, if one considers the spiritual master and ordinary human being, one is doomed.
Doom, that's kind of a light statement, isn't it? As opposed to like in trouble or that was a no-no or be careful or something like that, right? Doomed. Right, that's a powerful word that's chosen there. So obviously you should be very careful to not consider the spiritual master an ordinary human being. Some other references here. Want to read again, Prabhu?
A postman may deliver us $100, but we do not consider that the postman is giving us $100. The money is sent by a friend, and it is simply the postman's business to hand it over as it is, without taking anything or adding anything to it.
Okay. That's the rest of the same quote. Want to finish that?
His profession is that he delivers the $100 as it is sent by one's friend. There is a perfection. The postman may be imperfect in so many ways, but when he does his business perfectly, he's perfect.
Okay. From Prabhupada's Vyas Puja Address, New Vrindavan, 1972. So, kind of like the first polarity or complexity to understand that... the spiritual master is as good as Krishna, he's dear to Krishna, he's representative of Krishna, he's speaking on behalf of Krishna. Prabhupada would oftentimes say he's like the ambassador. Just like an ambassador, just like in today's world there's so much tension. If an ambassador from one country goes and visits another country, then it's very important that they treat that ambassador as good as the president or the prime minister. It's not you just think, oh, they're just an ambassador. He represents the country. In a sense, he or she's non-different from the country. And sometimes if they offend the ambassador of a particular country, sometimes that would end up in war because you're not respecting this person properly. So that's, you know, the doom idea. It's very, very serious that one understands the position. And interestingly, because there are some traditions that teach the guru is God. That's not our Vaishnava philosophy. Our Vaishnava philosophy, the guru is as good as God. Why is the guru as good as God? Because why? Who can say, why is he as good as God?
He delivers Krishna's message as it is.
Yeah, delivers the message as it is. Why else?
He's one in purpose with Krishna.
Good. One in purpose. Has the same purpose as Krishna. Good. representing Krishna, has the same purpose as Krishna. Okay, good. So in that sense, the Guru is non-different from Krishna. But we know in the early days of Prabhupada's preaching in the West, at a certain time there were some disciples that weren't very mature, started misunderstanding things a little bit, became a little influenced by Mayavadi philosophy, and they started preaching that actually Prabhupada is God. And Prabhupada immediately expelled them and sent a message to all of his temples and said, don't let any of them come to the temples. They become contaminated. Don't let them preach. Don't let them teach. This is they become infected by Mayavadi philosophy. So, paradox one. Guru is as good as God, but we have to make sure we don't be confused and think that the Guru is God. Okay? Now, look a little bit about the relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master, and how does the guru see himself? Okay, you want to read that one, Prabhu?
The relationship of a disciple with his spiritual master is as good as his relationship with the Supreme Lord. A spiritual master always represents himself as the humblest servitor of the personality of Godhead, but the disciple must look upon him as the manifested representation of Godhead.
Okay, so the disciple, as we noted here, sees the guru as good as Krishna, dear to Krishna, the perfect representative of Krishna, but the bona fide guru doesn't see himself like that. The bona fide guru sees himself as the servant of his spiritual master, and he sees himself as the humble, Prabhupada says, the humblest servitor, the personality of Godhead. That's the guru's qualification. Because he's fixed in being a servant, therefore he can train others how to be a servant. So that's a bit of a paradox, again, to try to understand as far as Guru Tattva within the Vaishnava tradition, is that we understand, you know, this in the future generations, the fact is our movement is a preaching movement. Prabhupada didn't just want one acharya or one guru carrying on the system. He wanted thousands of them, hundreds and thousands of gurus. So some of us in the room here now may be very humble servants. If we really realize that we're humble servants, then we may be qualified to accept disciples in the future. Of course, right now we're kind of mixing siksha and diksha. We'll talk about that in the future. And definitely, hope we know in the future generations, you know, there will be a time, maybe even now, some of the little children running around may in the future be gurus in the future. Some children yet unborn of devotees here may be gurus. Some people that we meet on the street tomorrow at college may become a guru in the future. So they're always the servant of Krishna. But if one takes on the service of spiritual master, then those that are studying see that person as the representative of Krishna. And they are the representative of Krishna. And they are as good as Krishna because they're delivering the message of Krishna. And it's interesting, this example, there's some other quotes in the disciple course. I took some of this material from the disciple course, where Prabhupada uses the word peon. He says, like a peon delivers the message, or like the postman delivers the message. But, so that's, you know, as a teacher, as the guru sees himself in a very humble way, but as disciples, we need to be very careful to always see the spiritual master as good as Krishna, as very dear to Krishna, and that we're simply the servant to the servant, serving the whole parampara through our spiritual master. So it's a little bit, a polarity for us to understand, to see how, because someone might think, well, you know, the spiritual master is as good as God, but why does he bow down when he comes in the temple? Or there's a very famous exchange with Jayadwaita Swami, maybe not so famous, but very important exchange. I'll just paraphrase it here, where Jayadwaita Swami is asking Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we understand that the spiritual master is perfect. How do we understand it? Because sometimes the pure devotee, who's using the term the pure devotee, sometimes the pure devotee quotes the wrong verse or doesn't remember where his glasses are. So, you know, when I think about that, I think I'm so grateful Jayadwaita Swami's courage to ask that question. I would think if I asked a question like that, it's like, you know, the doors of Kumbhipaka would open. And I would just disappear through the floor, never to be seen again for many, many yugas. But, you know, Maharaj, being very intelligent, he asked him that question. And Prabhupada said, no, no, and it's not like that. Again, I'm just paraphrasing. It's an important quote. Maybe we can look that up later and share it with you. But Prabhupada said, it's not like that. His perfection is that he does everything for Krishna. That's his perfection. That's his purity. That everything he does for Krishna. Because, you know, we might misunderstand. Well, okay, the guru is as good as God. But then, you know, the guru, again, maybe forgets where he put his glasses. Or might ask us, you know, what's that verse? Or, you know, sees a disciple and says, you know, Haribol Vishnu and Snow Guru Maharaj, I'm Krishna Das. You know, that's, and then, well, how can he be as good as God because God forgot my name and God doesn't forget anything? You know, it can lead to confusion. So, you know, very, 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 very important point that the spiritual master is his perfection. Is in his dedication to his spiritual master. So, here's this paradox. The guru is as good as God, yet he seems himself as a humble servant. You know, and this is very different from the material world. You say, you know, the CEO is a very powerful man. He sees himself as a very powerful man, isn't it? Or, you know, the President of the United States has so much power, he sees himself as having so much power, etc. So you can, you know, fill in the blank on what different powerful positions might want to have. But the guru always sees himself as a humble servant. Okay? So, another quote here. Somebody, one of the ladies that has a loud voice, want to read that one? You have a loud voice? Okay, can you see?
Generally, the spiritual master comes from the group of such eternal associates of the Lord. But anyone who follows the principles of such ever-liberated persons is as good as one in the above-mentioned group.
Okay, that one's a little complex. I'm going to reread that. She did it nice and loud, but I'm going to read it again so we can think about this a little bit. Generally, the spiritual master comes from the group of such eternal associates of the Lord, generally. But anyone who follows the principles of such ever-liberated persons is as good as one in the above-mentioned group. Okay, the GBC, there was a statement released March of last year that discussed this point, specifically understanding Prabhupada's preeminent position as the Siksha Guru, as the preeminent Siksha Guru for all of ISKCON. And also in that same statement pointed out, in reference to this quote, and perhaps Prabhupada might have said this in a couple places, that a guru in ISKCON may not be liberated, but as Prabhupada has explained, can still liberate us. So here's the second half of the quote. You want to read that one?
A person who is a liberated acharya and guru cannot commit any mistake, but there are persons who are less qualified or not liberated, but still can act as guru and acharya by strictly following the disciplic succession.
Okay. Persons who are less qualified or not liberated but still can act as guru and acharya by strictly following the disciplic succession. So a very, very important point that to understand, again, the paradox that the guru can guide us to the Supreme Lord because he is following and perfectly representing, repeating only what he's heard from his guru and from the parampara. So he can bring us to the Supreme liberated even if he is not liberated. A little difficult to understand. It's a little bit of a paradox here. But this is the statement of the Shastras, statement of our acharyas. Why is that potency there? Why is that possible? What is it that makes it work?
The spiritual master is following his spiritual master.
Yes.
Following the instructions.
Yes, yes, spiritual master, because he's following his spiritual master, because he's repeating what he's heard from his spiritual master. And what's the example that Prabhupada gives to show how that works? We just read up here a couple minutes ago.
I was thinking of the electrician.
Okay, give that one, then we'll go back to the other one.
The expert electrician and the apprentice. So when the apprentice follow exactly what the expert has taught him, mm-hmm. then he is from the view of everybody, the next
person. Okay, okay, good. As long as he follows what he's been taught, then he can have the same effect. What was the example we saw up here, the quote just a couple of minutes ago? The postman, right? If the postman doesn't change it, then the letter comes perfectly intact. So that's the potency that's there. Let's see, another topic. So here's another interesting point. Rabindranath Prabhu talked about this quite a bit this morning. Guru is one. That's a very deep letter, or Vyasa Puja, that Prabhupada wrote at that time. Very interesting. So the Guru is one. Let's see what Prabhupada said. Want to read again?
The Guru is offered first the respectful prayers, Nande Guru, and Guru, Bhuvachana, plural number, that many Gurus. But there are not many, there are one, Guru Tattva.
Okay, so a lecture, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay, so look at this again. So there are many gurus, but they're not many. They're one. Right? Sounds like Zen. There are many, but they're one. Isn't it? So what does that mean, there are many, but they're one? Are there different types of gurus? That's the question. Is there only one type of guru? What are some of the types of gurus? And again, this is something most of us were very familiar with, but we need to be able to explain it to others also. So what are some of the different types of gurus? Okay, what is that?
One who gives, introduces one to the path of devotional
service. Okay, good. Okay, good. First shows us the way. Anybody have any interesting stories about the one that first showed you the way? If you think about it, we all generally have one or two people. You do? Okay, is it short? You want to give us a short version? Okay. It's not a contaminated story, is it? We're in front of the deity, so make sure it's...
So, I'm coming from Poland.
Okay.
Back in Poland, I had friends. Mm-hmm. We had three mm-hmm. stories of home. And their grandmother lived with them.
Uh-huh.
And the grandmother was, majority of Polish people are Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
So, she was a very woman and spending most of the day in church. So my friends would kind of joke about her and so on. And one day she called me to the kitchen and she told me that if I have a few minutes, for example, riding a bus to school, to the college, that I should say prayers.
Somebody just says, can you hear him in the back? Okay, good.
To do prayers,
mm-hmm.
short Christian prayers. And she started doing it. So before I was, from that moment on, whenever I was on the bus or driving car, whenever I had 2 minutes, I would say prayer. So I believe that she was the first one who involved
the nice.
Interest and kind of the kind of family.
Very nice. We also have a little story like that? We all have one or two, I think. Anybody else want to share a story? Somebody at first kind of pointed out the way. Oftentimes it's a couple people. You want to say? No, you. He's looking all around. You were smiling. I thought you were thinking of a story. Actually, I meant him. He just keeps looking at everybody around. That's a good technique. I just learned something today. That worked really well. He just kept looking around.
Thank you, Prabhu. I was coming to the temple. I was going to the temple. I was visiting other temples. Sometime I was coming to the Potomac temple.
Mm-hmm.
I came for Sunday feast. And Sundarananda Prabhu stood behind me during the feast. And he was introducing himself and checking out where and everything. And then during the dinner time, he mentioned that they're having Bhakti Ruksha at their home. And he was checking if I'm interested. I just gave my name for namesake, but I was not.
Because you hadn't learned this technique yet of going. That came later, huh? That was when they started asking you for donations. For a dinner invitation, you were ready to go.
Then I got an email during the week. I was not sure I will go, but since I had nothing to do, I went there. And it was excellent. The first class was excellent. And I was looking forward for the second class. And then, you know, His Grace Achyutkumar Prabhu and Prem Tarini Mataji, like, extended more of their care. And then I started, you know, feel to commit.
So you were coming just kind of out of your cultural interest in the temple, but he really showed you the way by inviting you to go more deeper in your Krishna consciousness. Nice. Good. And you were just somebody's grandmother said start praying. Yeah. So the one that first, one more story? One of the ladies have a story you'd like to share? Some friend or relative or someone that set you on the path to spiritual life? Here, this lady right here.
I used to go to yoga classes, and the teacher is a devotee, and he invited me for the Sunday feast. And I went, and there was some devotees there. There is one in particular, her name is Manasi Ganga, and she invited me to dance. And after that, you know, I was really, you know, I like dancing, so I was there and I danced. And then after the feast was over, we went to another devotee's house, and you know, we were just talking. They were explaining, and then immediately they gave me a japa. And then a japa bag and the mala, and they showed me how to pray, and that was it. You know, I started coming every time I could, Sunday for sure, and that's how I got.
So you had a few there. The first person, the yoga teacher, you were just going to yoga class, and they said, no, come to bhakti.
Yeah, right.
They brought you to the temple, and the temple said, okay, now come with us to this other program.
And that
the
happened
other program
said, one day.
Yeah.
The same, everything
you had three Brahma Pradarshika gurus.
Right, I did.
So you make special fast advancement. One day you went from zero to chanting japa.
Exactly.
This shows the potency of the Brahma Pradarshika guru. That's nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. So what are the other types of gurus? Some other types of gurus. Siksha guru? What else? Diksha guru? What else? Chaita Guru, right? Yeah, Sannyas Guru. Mataji, what do you know about Sannyas Guru? So, right, Chaita Guru, the Lord in the heart, right? Sometimes we probably describe Lord Nityananda being the original Guru. Paramahamsa, the Lord is in the heart, the Chaita Guru who's guiding us. When did the Chaita Guru start guiding us? Just like these people started guiding you at the yoga class, and then at the home program, to the home program, and then they give you japa beads. When did the Chaita Guru start his instructions?
When one is seriously following instructions of a spiritual master, like a spiritual master's presence is not important.
That's when the Chaita Guru begins helping us?
If I feel like I kind of heard that Chaita Guru helps a lot.
Yes.
In the absence of spiritual master's presence.
Yes. So, when does he start helping a lot? Yeah, when we come to the material world. Right? As soon as we come, he's there. He's instructing us. Trying to guide us, instruct us with us, right? We know from the Upanishads describe the two birds in the tree. So that's the Chaita Guru is there, Paramatma is there, watching us try to enjoy this material world, reminding us, you know, we've all heard that little message, that won't make you happy. Why are you doing this? you have other options, maybe you should look for other options, etc. So even before we, way back, as long as we're in this material world, the Chaitya Guru is there with us and trying to guide us. And it's described, when we become sincere in a spiritual inquiry, then what happens? How does the Chaitya Guru help us then? When we start really wanting God, or we have a little spiritual desire, what does he? How does he help us then? Guides us where? Guides us to the external manifestation of the spiritual master, right? So there's the Siksha Guru, who gives us instruction and guidance. Raise your hand if you have a Siksha Guru. Raise your hand if you have more than one Siksha Guru. Raise your hand if you have 20 or more Siksha Gurus. Okay. How many Siksha Gurus can you have?
Unlimited,
right? Unlimited. Well, if you think about it, sometimes, of course, in ISKCON, we also have this concept kind of like a formal Siksha Guru. There are some devotees have that formal relationship with a Siksha Guru. But within our society, there's so many Siksha Gurus. This idea of like Vartma Pradarshika and Siksha Guru. What's the famous story we have of the later to be very famous spiritual teacher who accredited his spiritual life to an instruction given by a not very elevated soul? Yeah. What's the story? We don't have to get into all details, but it's a colorful story. She was, what was her profession? Banker, lawyer, professor?
She was in the prostitution.
Yes, as they say, woman of ill repute. But as we know the story goes, he was so attached to her and he wanted to go see her this one night. There was a big storm. He almost died on the way getting to see her. I've heard varieties of the story, anywhere from a storm to grabbing hold of an alligator in the river and all kinds of... But either way, it was a harrowing experience. And then at first she can't even believe he's there, because who would come out this time of night? And then she says, if you were just as attached to Krishna as you are to me. And because of that whole experience, had been such a shock and a trauma to him, he almost died, etc. Then it penetrated. He thought, what am I doing? And then he considered her Chintamani. He considered her one of his gurus, right? Because she had shown him the path, and he honored her. Even, you know, her name is remembered, because in some of his songs and things that he wrote, he remembered her. So we know about her. He didn't have to tell anybody that story. In his humility, he did, to show us the importance of spiritual instruction and manifest his own humility. So the Siksha Guru gives instructions and guidance. We have many Siksha Gurus. All of you in this room, you are Siksha Gurus for so many people. When somebody first comes to the temple and just says, you know, what's the schedule? And we say, you know, the artik's in half an hour and thanks for coming. You're inspiring them, you're teaching them, you're encouraging them. I can remember when I first went to the Denver temple, one of the things that really impressed me, this place was special. I sat down on the floor of the prasadam room in the basement of the temple, and a devotee named Artada Prabhu came up and sat down next to me and started to tell me how this food is non-different from God. You know, defining prasadam, right? It's non-different from Krishna. This is sanctified food. And yeah, I was thinking it tastes good, but this is pretty interesting, that just, you know, how just by eating it, you're becoming purified. And, well, that's pretty amazing. So then, he talked to me and giving me instructions for quite a while. And then when I was done, I went into the bathroom to wash my hands, and there was a devotee named Yogya Purusha, who was a very young devotee. He's a 16-year-old African-American devotee. He's a big muscular guy, big smile, very friendly guy with this like orange gumshoe. I'd never seen a gumshoe before. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody on their hands and knees cleaning the floor in the bathroom before. And he proceeded to tell me that cleaning the bathroom was pure devotional service. And you could, and just by cleaning the bathroom, you make spiritual advancement. And I remember thinking, this place is really too much. You know. Like, you know, the food purifies you, cleaning the bathroom purifies you. I got to check this out a little bit more deeply. These people, you know, these people, this is different than anything I've heard before. So both of those people, they were siksha gurus. They were giving instructions and giving guidance. Of course, sometimes that becomes more regular if someone is like, you know, a lot of devotees, they lead home programs, they're being siksha gurus for those people that are coming, or temple president definitely is a siksha guru, or the bhakta leader, they're all siksha guru. So then diksha guru, a little more, also gives instructions, initiates and officiates, it makes the official connection with us to the parampara, to the guru parampara, gives the spiritual name to us, accepts our vows on behalf of Krishna, right? And then removes the sinful reactions, you know, ultimately on behalf of Krishna, that as Krishna's representative for the process of initiation, takes away those sins and they're taken by Krishna. So, different types of gurus. It's interesting, some places, Prabhupada even talks about the mother and father being gurus. They're also gurus. And of course, as Vaishnavas, those of us that are parents, we would hope to be spiritually inspiring gurus, and not just gurus as most parents are, just inspiring their children to be enthusiastic about materialistic life, but to take shelter Krishna. So there's different types of gurus. Here's an interesting a quote about the importance of diksha. Somebody want to read that? Pooh?
Unless one is initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, all his devotional activities are useless. A person who is not properly initiated can descend again into the animal species.
Okay. Quite a strong verse. Okay, the importance of taking shelter of a spiritual master. There's one reference, Srila Prabhupada was asked one time, at what point do you achieve the mercy of the spiritual master? You know, is it first initiation? Is it second initiation? Sannyas initiation? You know, is it... you know, when you become a sannyasi, when you become a temple president, you know, when is it you receive, when does he receive the mercy of the spiritual master? Anybody know what Prabhupada responded to that question? I heard the buzzword. What is it? Yes, when you begin to follow the instructions, that's the point you receive the mercy of the spiritual master. So that's the emphasis Prabhupada put in that following instructions. Sometimes there's a tendency to think that if I get initiated, I get a spiritual name, now it's okay. Right, I'm all set. In fact, I can remember, I hope this doesn't go on these days, but maybe it does some places or some, it's harder to measure in the congregation, but in the early years there wasn't so much of a congregation. Almost everyone that got initiated was living in the temple. And I can remember at least a couple situations where devotees got initiated. This is in the mid-70s. And, you know, they had to stick around for at least 6 months, but then they'd get initiated and then 6 days later, they were gone. It was always kind of a surprise. Like, well, you know, apparently they thought if I can just get this, you know, name, or then I'm okay, or something like that. But they would leave soon after. In fact, I can remember one time. I don't know if this person was initiated or not, but I'm just standing in the Brahmacharya ashram, kind of like here, a little bit. Bottom of the staircase, there was a shower and a mirror, and you put your tilak on, and all of a sudden from the upstairs in the attic, we heard this. And then down the stairs. And then I'm looking in the mirror, what was that? And then behind me. And then the door flung open. And all the Brahmacharis and Ragamshas, you know, we went outside, we kind of like leaned out the door and looked down the street. And he just ran off in the distance. We never saw him again. A very strange situation. I have no idea what was going on in his mind, but something didn't work that day. So the idea is initiation. What does the word initiate mean?
Start.
It means full stop, right? You see, now I'm initiated full stop. No means to start. So, to start what? What are we starting? Starting to be proud because I have a name? Right? We're starting to be proud, Prabhupada says, because you have a two-paisa thread? Right now I'm special because I have a two-paisa thread? No. That we start to follow the orders. That's your point, right? We get the mercy from the spiritual master, not so much by the name, not even so much by the ritual of initiation, but that we follow the instructions. You know, we have a particular process of initiation, but Prabhupada himself didn't always follow that. There's probably several examples. There's one I know for sure in the Sringananda Prabhu in Los Angeles. His mother was a very kind of a prominent businesswoman in Los Angeles. She wasn't happy that her son was becoming a Krishna devotee, was living in the temple. And if any of you know Nrisimhananda Prabhu, very talented artist. He did a lot of the ISKCON videos, the original TV videos years ago, and very active. He was a professional a producer at some stage of his career outside of ISKCON too. A very capable person, also very strong-willed. You might say stubborn personality. I never met his mother, but you know, they say sons take after mothers. So I could understand his mother must have been very strong willed. So she wasn't happy that her son was a devotee. She was making her opinions being heard through various avenues of, I don't know, the media or, you know, important people in the city. So she was creating quite a wave. And devotees told Nrisimhananda that he should move out of the, you know, it might be best if he wasn't there. So he went to see Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told him, you need to go home and stay with your mother. And, you know, let her understand there's no problem. You know, you're okay, you're healthy, whatever. But he said, Prabhupada, I'm not initiated. And Prabhupada had someone bring a set of beads. He handed him the beads. He says, your name is Nrisimhananda. So he initiated. He said, now go home to your mother. Which he did. And by Krishna's grace and Prabhupada's grace, he never lost the connection. You know, you could say, wait, he didn't sit in front of a fire. Now, as I tell the story, I don't think he ever did. Might have to research that. But as far as I know, he never did. Do you know Rabindranath Prabhu? I don't think there was ever. Nrisimhananda, I think that was initiation. Prabhupada gave him the beads there, and I don't think there was a fire ceremony later. Yeah, I don't think so. But either way, that was the connection. So, again, initiation means to begin. That's the critical point here, as far as diksha. Now, siksha, a little bit more about siksha. A devotee must have only one initiating spiritual master, because in the scriptures, acceptance of more than one is always forbidden. There is no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on, purport Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, one initiating spiritual master, many siksha gurus. Someone want to read this verse? She wants you to do it. You see that? Go ahead. Oh, she's the one we all have to participate. Go ahead. This one's a different tune, isn't it? Okay, just read it. Okay. Which means... Okay. Important point for us in our Krishna consciousness movement that sometimes there's a tendency to simplify things and to put all the emphasis on the Diksha Guru. But as we've understood, there's different gurus. Ultimately, Chaitya Guru, the Diksha Guru, the Siksha Guru are manifestations of the Chaitya Guru. But they all are acting in this position of representing Krishna, speaking on behalf of Krishna, and helping deliver to Krishna. So, important point from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he says the Siksha Guru is as important because they're training us.
And sometimes we've seen this in our ISKCON society, and with something we want to try to rectify now and in the future, that some places there may be someone who's living in a community and they're cared for by, say, a bhakta leader or a congregational development director, someone has a bhakta vriksha program, and then they have the temple president takes care of them, and some of the senior ladies take care of them, and some of the senior men take care of them and help them in so many phases, and then they get initiated. Sometimes devotees think that out of loyalty to my Diksha Guru, I'm now supposed to minimize or cut off or decrease those other relationships. But actually it should be just the opposite. Because when I'm accepting a formal initiation with a Diksha Guru, I'm formalizing my relationship with Krishna, my relationship with the Parampara, and to that extent, I'm formalizing my relationship with all the other Vaishnavas. So why would my relationship decrease? And that's something that, again, who's taken the disciple course here? Raise your hand if you have. Okay, about 10 of you or so. So that's it. That's something to emphasize there, the importance of even trying to understand how to work with multiple authorities within the ISKCON society and appreciating all the different manifestations of Guru. So here's another reference from Prabhupada. The Guru is one. You want to read that one, Pearl?
The Guru is one. The Guru is one because he comes in the succession. Lord Vasudeva and Krishna start 5,000 years ago. There is no difference between the two instructions. Although hundreds and thousands of acharyas have come and gone, the message is one. The real guru cannot be true. So the real guru does not depend on the creator.
Okay. Now, question for everybody. We are an international society. How important is it for us to understand that Guru, although one, comes as many? Does that have any particular significance for us in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? Prabhu, you want to share some thoughts on that? Yes. Explain why you're agreeing with me, other than the fact you're the most intelligent man in the room. Why else are you agreeing with me?
We're surrounded by so many devotees who train one person, and so it's very essential to have that sense of unity as opposed to disparity, that I'm this person's such and such, and you know, and not consider or give sufficient respect maybe to another person, and it gets really messy. So we see it in any small community or big communities, that happens all the time. So for the longevity of ISKCON to be united, this principle needs to be very and fully understood, I feel.
Okay. So if we don't understand the principle that there are, by Krishna's arrangement and by Prabhupada's arrangement and by the nature of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that we will have many gurus, Diksha gurus, Siksha gurus. Maybe we can write some of these down. There's some of the problems that would come. That by understanding that, one, we make sure we maintain proper respect. Right? That was one of your center points, respect, and then I think maybe also said cooperation. How important is cooperation in our society?
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you cooked this morning. Nobody. Okay, two. Okay, raise your hand if you ate this morning. Okay. Do you need any more examples about the importance of cooperation? Okay. They have room for one more, though. You can join tomorrow. Yeah, we can see that. Rabindra Supri made an interesting point this morning. I wrote it down. You said that organization is something...
Force multiplier.
Multiplies the force. In other words, if there's...
individually five people try to lift a weight, maybe they can each lift 100 pounds. So it's 500 pounds. But they lift together, somehow that unity, that organization, they might be able to lift 1,000 pounds. So it's a force multiplier. So some of us were cooking, and others of us were worshiping the deities, others of us were trying to figure out the PowerPoint, and etc. Others of us were milking the cows. So without that cooperation, where's the international side for Krishna consciousness? Amapur, you had a point?
Yeah. So when Prabhupada was here, for all the devotees of Israel, he was the only guru. When Prabhupada was here, he was the only guru for all the devotees in ISKCON.
Okay.
So now there's devotees in ISKCON who are not already initiated by Prabhupada, get initiated by various spiritual masters who are Prabhupada's disciples. So if devotees don't understand that point...
devotees don't understand that point, then we won't have ISKCON. We'll just have many movements that are apparently united but not really.
Yeah, now that sounds really far-fetched. There's no examples of that in history, is there? Yeah, one generation back. Again, Rabindranath Prabhu was excellent in class this morning. One generation back, there were different ideas. He should be guru, he should be guru. We all should follow him. We all should follow him. And the whole thing broke apart. So, unity with ISKCON. How important is unity? Prabhupada gave one of his many instructions, but an important instruction to the GBC. He said, every year, all the GBC members should go and meet in Mayapur and discuss this one thing. You know what it is? Sure, I don't know. She's heard it, the mantra. Unity in diversity. Prabhupada said, the GBC members, they should go that discuss that topic, unity in diversity. So in the same way, there's a tendency. Why would we want to think that really there's only one real guru, or really there's only one best guru, or really there's only one special guru? Why would we want to? Why might we think like that? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, I'm special. I'm best. I'm the. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Just like it's kind of a, you know, it's another manifestation of a false ego, isn't it? You know, America's number one. Yeah, I'm glad I'm American. Or, you know, whatever. Go Tigers, go Bengals, go Bears or something, whatever it is. You know, because when our team wins, we feel we're special, right? I live in Washington, D.C., and you know, with the election cycles, half the city is elated, the other half is depressed, you know, with the flow, with that concept. So something we have to be careful of. It can become a manifestation of our false ego. And if we're actually understanding, now I'm connected to the parampara, what does it mean when I understand, okay, I'm connected to the parampara, I have a guru and he has a guru. What's the essence of that connection? What's my realization meant to be? First and foremost, what should I now understand?
I'm the servant.
I'm the servant. So if I'm the servant, does that mean I'm the servant of these but not the servants of those? I'll serve this guru but not that guru? Excuse me, Prabhu, before I serve you, prasadam. Who are you initiated by? See? And actually, you know, it sounds, it's we laugh, but we hear things that in certain places is sometimes manifest in ISKCON where, you know, I'm the disciple of Vishnu Swami. I'm just pulling a name up. I'm the disciple of Vishnu Swami, and I'm the temple president, or I'm the head of the women's Sankirtan party, and obviously, you know, the new van's going to go to my god sisters or my god brothers. Why? Well, because, you know, we have a special rasa. You know, these things are possible. And that's the beginning of what Atma Prabhu is saying. You know, that's what can lead to lack of unity and begin of so many problems. So it's very important for us to understand some of these polarities as far as the position of the guru. The guru is... Yes, please.
So,
On a spiritual level, yes.
Or maybe, I mean, an instruction maybe. Are you supposed to decide? Are you supposed to choose between which one connects with you better? Or
yeah. Well, any instruction we get, we should accept blindly from anyone, right? That's what it means to be a devotee, right? It means you check your intelligence at the door. I have some friends in the anti-cult movement. Sometimes they think like that. So you check your intelligence at the door. And whatever Nutama says, because he's sitting behind the stage today, you should do. Right? Is that it? No. So anything that we learn, what should we have? Should we? Is there any kind of system for us?
Well, yeah, we should hold up to the light of
the scriptures. Okay. Shastra. Guru and Sadhu, right? So that's always there. But why do we accept someone as spiritual master? Another thing, those who took the disciple course, right? What do we talk about? Sometimes devotees may think, well, you know, in fact, we do skits in the in-class version of devotees do skits about to show ways that aren't appropriate in the selecting of a spiritual master. Well, I'm going to get initiated by so-and-so. Why? Because he sings really nicely. You know, or I'm going to get initiated by so-and-so. Why? Well, because he has so many disciples. There are like so many of us. It's like amazing how many of us there are. You know? Whatever. Isn't it? So what's the essential qualification or motivation that we should accept a spiritual master? Transparent medium, right? They engage us in Krishna service. They set an example of what it means to be a devotee. They're strictly committed to their own spiritual master. That's first and foremost. You know, bona fide spiritual master is fixed as being a servant of his own spiritual master. And he doesn't say anything different from that. And, you know, even we know Srila Prabhupada, there are examples of Prabhupada. There's one story. Prabhupada was in the, it was at the Gaudiya Math mission in Mayapur, and there was a snake. You know, and snake in India doesn't mean like here, snakes like, you know, pick it up, isn't it cute, and, you know, throw it in the woods, you know. Snake in India means run for your life, right? I know, we live in Washington, D.C., we have, there's a creek. And I remember one day, so the creek, there's snakes in the creek. And one day, one of the devotees had recently moved from India. And he was like at the bottom of the hill, those of you who know the D.C. temple, at the bottom of the hill by the creek, like running, snake, snake, snake. So a situation like that there was a snake, and all the devotees were frozen. They weren't sure what to do. And I think it was actually near Prabhupada. Like, I think Prabhupada might even been in danger himself. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came on in the veranda and said, kill it. He yelled down, kill it. So they immediately killed the snake. And Prabhupada said later, he recorded this, he said, I had some doubt. How is it that Guru Maharaj wanted to kill this snake? So Prabhupada, see, he had some doubt. How is it he wanted to kill the snake? And later he read there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that even a saintly person is pleased when a snake or an envious person is, you know, controlled. So, yeah, I'm paraphrasing there. Snake is killed, envious person, I'm not sure exactly. But so, you know, our Prabhupada himself said he has some doubt about that. So he was questioning, trying to understand that more deeply. So, you know, we're meant to use our intelligence given to us by Krishna to accept and to study. Just like I described, the disciple should study before accepting a spiritual master. The spiritual master studies the disciple. Now, it's explained that once you accept the spiritual master, you know, then you have to submit. You have to accept that. And at the same time, it doesn't mean one gives up one's intelligence. Okay? Because we're always understanding Guru is representing Shastra, Guru is representing Sadhus. Okay? So we have just a few minutes left here. I wanted to just discuss a little bit. We see it can happen sometimes. What if we read earlier the Guru's perfection is that he represents Krishna. He's the guide. He's connecting us to Krishna. He's engaging us in the service of Krishna. What problems might happen if we misunderstand what it means that the spiritual master's perfection? You know, we talk about that the spiritual master is as good as God. If we don't understand that properly, what problems might happen? I want to discuss this because some of these things have happened in our society. What possibly could happen? Okay. If we have an improper understanding, that might block. Okay. Okay. What else? I'm thinking from the other side a little bit too. Okay, we commit offenses if we're not appreciating the spiritual master's position. Very good.
We're doomed.
We're doomed, yes. He says with a smile. He likes that one. Good. So we have to be very, very careful in our relationship with the spiritual master and the service attitude towards the spiritual master. We're going to talk one of my sessions, I think, tomorrow about how do we balance service to the Vani, Vapu, and the mission. What are some of the other problems that can arise if we misunderstand what it means? If we misunderstand that the perfection of the guru is in representing his guru. What can go wrong if we misunderstand that?
Minimize the position of the spiritual.
Okay, we might minimize the position of the spiritual master. Okay, similar along the lines, we can offend, we can stop the mercy. What else?
We take the spiritual master as a companion, so we can offer them.
Okay, good. We might misunderstand and think that the spiritual master is independent. So then I can also be independent. But we forget that has his perfection is that he's dependent as a servant of his spiritual master. Okay, good. What happens if I'm thinking... Yeah?
If he stops representing Krishna, we should realize that he's not the spiritual master.
Okay, yeah, that's getting to the other side. Good, let's look at it. Thank you, from this side. What if I'm thinking the spiritual master's perfection, he is as good as God? I get a little confused about that. And I see maybe something like Jayadvaita Swami said with Prabhupada, maybe he forgets where his glasses are, something like that. What could happen if I don't understand in a practical way what his perfection is? What might happen? We said offenses. What else might happen? Okay, good. We might minimize his instructions. Might we also think that, well, he quoted a verse wrong, therefore maybe he's not bona fide, he's not perfect because he quoted a verse wrong, and maybe I need to go find somebody else who is more clearly perfect, right? Because I'm misunderstanding what his perfection is. See, his perfection is that he's not deviating from the instructions of his spiritual master. He's fixed in serving his spiritual master. He's transparent in presenting that. Ramana Supra, were you want to add a comment?
Yeah, sometimes people get an anxiety about that. We have like God sister. I remember in a room, there's a noise outside. Prabhupada said, "What's that noise? Go see what that noise is." And then later she was like, "Oh, wasn't that a wonderful pastime?" Because the idea that Prabhupada actually didn't know what it was really bothered her. So she, her thing that she needed reassuring, yeah, the Prabhupada actually, as good as God, he knew what the noise was and is just doing this to get, you know. And I've seen other people like that. Prabhupada, what is that verse? And somebody says, yeah, that's the verse. Oh, that's a pastime. You know, like they just can't think to me, it shows that actually a kind of lack of faith. And that there's a kind of underlying anxiety there. So you'll see it that way too sometimes.
So the properly placed faith would be What, can you just explain that? Yeah. Properly based faith in the guru means we have faith that,
yeah,
what?
That he represents his own spiritual master and teaches Krishna consciousness, but it doesn't mean when it says as good as God, he's like God in that, you know, he's omniscient, omnipotent, and so on. You know? See, sometimes people are anxiety and they're not dealing with their anxieties, and so instead of becoming proper disciples, they become like clinging vines, you know, and the idea that I have a great spiritual master is my substitute for actually making advancement in Krishna consciousness. That's the kind of thing that can happen in this case.
Thank you. And then one final point that can come out of this. What is the expertise of the spiritual master? What is the spiritual master's expertise? We're taking shelter of the spiritual master. We're seeking guidance and instruction from the spiritual master. What is his expertise? He can remove doubts. He gives us spiritual knowledge to remove the doubts. What else? Engages us in Krishna service. He's representing Krishna by being the perfect servant, showing us what it means to be a servant. Delivering the message as it is. One more. Engages in appropriate service. Good. How about the stock market? Is he expert in the stock market? Does he need to be expert in the stock market? Should you expect him to be expert in the stock market? Should you ask him where to invest your stocks? No, that's not his field of expertise. Right? If there's, is he necessarily, does the guru necessarily know how to get your car fixed? Is that his expertise? No, what's his expertise? He knows Krishna. He knows how to give us Krishna. He can explain Krishna, engage us in service. Sometimes devotees, they kind of think, okay, again, he's as good as God. So, you know, please tell me. I mean, this is there, I think, especially like in Indian culture. Sometimes I see it when I visit India. There's kind of a tendency to approach a spiritual authority and say, tell me what to do. You know, and then the idea is that you're counseling someone like that, you say, well, what do you think you should do? I don't know. You tell me what to do. You know, that's, you know, how do I get my car fixed? Well, that's not in the Bhagavatam. You know? Just like I know, like in Chaupati, some of the communities in India, they have, you know, like, say, for instance, somebody wants to change ashram. They have communities of senior grastas that help one understand what, you know, what do I need in terms of my ashram, and, you know, who might be a suitable candidate and how to guide me in those things. It's not necessarily the expertise of a guru. Guru doesn't mean marriage counselor. They may have great wisdom to bring in from their Krishna conscious perspective. It doesn't mean that that's their expertise, or that finance is their expertise, or, you know, which side of the street you should build your house. That's not their expertise. And if we think like that, we will be disappointed, and we're expecting unfair and inappropriate things. And sometimes it can lead, in the extreme form, it can lead to like ritvikism. Okay, nobody's as, no, you know, they even have an inflated concept of Prabhupada, as Ravindra Suprabhu was saying. Prabhupada wasn't like he could hear everything outside the door. That's not what it means. That's not Prabhupada's position. So people think, well, okay, there's nobody so perfect, I have to go directly to Prabhupada, who, in their own mind, again, even doesn't understand Prabhupada's position. Prabhupada said his qualification was that he was the representative of his spiritual master. So that's the essential point. Okay? So I think we're out of time. Thank you very much, and we'll have some more sessions later on. I think kirtan now or something is...